Taklinavascha vibrito kuchapadesha.
Taklinavascha vibrito kuchapadesha.
Sinchancha udrita brihat kavara prasanna. Taklinavascha vibrito kuchapadesha.
Taklinavascha vibrito kuchapadesha.
Sinchanja udrita brihat kavara prasanna.
Sinchanja udrita brihat kavara prasanna.
Gandham smarecha kajihirshaya yopaguya.
Gandham smarecha.
Jata smarat smayal sarva dhanha virejo.
Jata smarat smayal sarva dhanha virejo.
Thy Lord Krishna's queens.
Klina.
Wet.
Vastra.
Whose clothes.
Vibhita.
Revealed. Uru. Thighs.
Kucha.
Of their breasts.
Padesha,
the area.
Sanchanchaha,
sprinkling.
Udarita,
scattered.
Brihat,
large.
Karara,
from the braids of their hair.
Prasunnaha,
whose flowers.
Kantam,
their consort.
Smile.
Indeed.
Rechaka.
His syringe.
Jiherishayaya.
With the desire of taking away.
Upaguya.
Embracing.
Jata.
Arisen.
Smara.
Of feelings of lust.
Utsmaya.
With wide smiles.
Lasad,
glowing.
Vadanaha,
whose faces.
Virejhu,
they appeared resplendent. Translation. Under the drenched clothing of the queens, their thighs and breasts would become visible. The flowers tied in their large braids would scatter as they sprayed water on their consort, and on the plea of trying to take away his syringe, they would embrace him. By his touch, their lusty feelings would increase, causing their faces to beam with smiles. Thus Lord Krishna's queens shone with resplendent beauty. So, I'll read up to text 14. There's no purpose to these verses here, and they describe the playful sporting of Krishna with his queens in Dwarka. Text 11.
Krishnastu tatstana vishajita kunkumashak Kridha Visanga Duta Kuntala Brinda Bandana Sinchan Moho Yvati Bhir Patischa Mano Hareme Karindu Bhir Eve Bhapati Parita.
Lord Krishna's flower garland would become smeared with kumkum from their breasts, and his abundant locks of hair would become disheveled as a result of his absorption in the game. As the Lord repeatedly sprayed his young consorts, and they sprayed him in turn, he enjoyed himself like the king of elephants, enjoying in the company of his bevy of she-elephants.
Natanam natikanam cha gita vyapaya jivinam Pidalankaravam Vasamsi Krishna Dattasya Chashriyam.
Afterward, Lord Krishna and his wives would give the ornaments and clothing they had worn during their water sports to the male and female performers who earned their living from singing and from playing instrumental music.
Krishna Shivam Viharato Yachale Prakshita Smitai Nanamakshali Pirishvangai Shinam Kilarita Diyam.
In this way, Lord Krishna would sport with his queens, totally captivating their hearts with his gestures, talks, glances and smiles, and also with his jokes, playful exchanges and embraces.
Uccha mukundaika dhiho gira unmata vajchatam chintayanta ravindaksham tanime gadataha shunu.
The queens would become stunned in ecstatic trance, their minds absorbed in Krishna alone. Then, thinking of their lotus-eyed Lord, they would speak as if insane. Please hear these words from me as I relate them. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that this superficial appearance of insanity in Lord Krishna's queens, as if they had become intoxicated by datura or some other hallucinogenic drug, was in fact the manifestation of the sixth progressive stage of pure love of God, technically known as Prema Vaichitra. Srila Rupa Goswami refers to this variety of Anuraga in his Ujjvala Nilamani 15.134 Prayasyat Sani Karshepi Pramodkarsha Sabhavataha Ya Vishlesha Jyatista Prema Vaichitriyam Mujjate. When, as a natural byproduct of one's extreme love, one feels the distress of separation, even in the direct presence of the beloved, this state is called Prema Vaichitriya. So, here, Srila Sukadeva Goswami is speaking the last part, the last chapter, the last pastime of the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And in concluding the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, as described in the purport to the first verse, he is following the principle of ending something very sweetly. So, therefore, he is discussing, he is relating this pastime, very, very attractive, very sweet pastime of Lord Krishna and his 1,108 queens in Dwarka in their playful water sports within the palaces of Dwarka in the mood of love. So this is a very, very sweet pastime. So in order to set the scene for this loving pastime, Sukadeva Goswami describes the very beautiful setting of Dwarka. Dwarka is manifests Krishna's opulence and beauty. It is such opulence and beauty, of course, that has never been is incomparable in this material world. Within the course of history, even if you take all the opulence and beauty within the whole course of history and put it all together, it still wouldn't compare to the beauty and the opulence of Dwarka. all the palaces, everything bedecked and made from literally jewels and gold and silver and pearls and coral. Everywhere you look, of course, there were parks and trees, all different types of trees, all different types of parks with different designs, parks with flowering bushes and fruit trees, and because of the beautiful aroma of the lotuses, all the various types of different coloured lotuses in the lakes, there were beautiful breezes, you know, coming through all the city of Dwarka, humming bees and singing birds, and in this way a very, very beautiful scene. for Krishna's loving pastimes with his queens, something which cannot be imitated, because everything in the material world is a very poor imitation of what Krishna is manifesting in the spiritual world. Actually, the impersonalists, they dare not even imagine such variety and beauty and opulence in the spiritual world. They can't even, you know, think in those terms. For them, because they think that opulence and beauty is something only found in the material world, they're very, very fearful of it. And so they you know, dare not even think of it. but actually Krishna, in order to dispel all misgivings and to prove that the spiritual world is filled with beauty and opulence and wonder, he manifests these pastimes, he manifests his own abode, and brings with him his associates, so that we can actually have a glimpse of the wonder of the spiritual world. So in Dwarka, there were 16,108 principal palaces for Krishna's queens, and in each of those various palaces there were beautiful lakes that Krishna would sometimes swim in with his consorts, with the queens, and they would enjoy. Very, very inviting. Not like the water in those lakes, of course, was crystal clear, you know, and all sorts of beautiful lotus flowers and things like that. Not like our Yarra River, which is what colour is it now? Brown, dark brown, dark green, sludge green. They've actually. I heard that their one Melbourne councillor wants to make along the banks of the Yarra, they want to put all sand. So it's something like what they do in France, where they have, you know, part of the river, they have all sand, and people go down there and they sit on deck chairs and swim in the water and everything like that. So they want to spend millions and millions of dollars and put all this sand and deck chairs and, you know, make it so that it's this wonderful place of, you know, romantic sort of setting. Of course, the problem is that everyone is saying it won't work because no one will swim in that water. people are scared that, you know, accidentally fall in it. So, you know, Dwarka, of course, is a vast difference from this is from how we try to imitate very poorly, you know, what happens in the spiritual world. Actually, Everything we do in the material world, we're just trying to imitate what we used to do with Krishna in the spiritual world. The trouble is, the material energy is an inferior energy, and it's not possible. If we actually want to enjoy the natural propensities that we have, spiritual propensities, with Krishna, we have to do that in the spiritual world with Krishna. You cannot do it on the banks of the Yarra. And then, you know, even you go down the banks of the Yarra, you know, people are lucky if they can actually find someone that will put up with their bad qualities in this day and age anyway, you know, let alone here in this pastime. We're hearing how Krishna is sporting with these queens. Now, you've got to remember that even when they were great-great-grandmothers, they were still performing this pastime. Now, you try and imagine your great-great-grandmother sitting on the banks of the Yarra, trying to be romantic with your great-great-grandfather if he's still alive. You might have to drag his coffin in up there. So, you know, in the material world, it's just not quite the same. It just doesn't work. Krishna's queens are their ever-fresh beauty, ever-youthful. Just like all the residents of the spiritual world. And they were so beautiful, it's described that their movements were like lightning. So you imagine when you see when people see a flash of lightning in the sky, you know, you stop. Oh, did you see that? It's stunning. You know, it captures your attention. You can't look away. Very, very, very attractive. So the movements, the beauty of the movements of these queens of Dwarka was like that, like lightning. So Krishna, of course, he was enjoying with his 16,108 queens in 16,108 different palaces and the beautiful lakes and gardens there. But Krishna was the only enjoyer of all these queens. These queens, of course, were Rukmini is described as the goddess of fortune, and all the other queens of expansions of Rukmini, they're also goddesses of fortune. And Krishna expanded himself in 16,108 different forms in order to be with them simultaneously. It's not, again, sometimes people imitate Krishna in the material world by being the enjoyer of many wives. Actually, in the course of history, you'll see that sometimes there are the men that may have a dozen, a hundred, a couple of hundred wives. Yeah, it's happened. Of course, no one can, you know, imitate Krishna's 16,108 wives. But the problem is, you know, you've got to imagine the plight of those poor wives in the material world. Now, one man, maybe a couple of hundred wives, it means maybe once a year or once every 6 months they get to spend a day with their husband, you know, some time. So, very, very difficult for that one person, therefore, to, you know, keep even, you know, a few hundred wives happy. But Krishna expanded so that he was personally with each and every wife. But that expansion was not like the expansion of the yogis. Yogis like Subhari Muni, they can expand up to eight times. There's, you know, the if they are very, very exalted yogis, because ordinary yogis can't do that. But a very, very exalted, very powerful yogi may be able to expand 8 times. But even that expansion is something like the television expansion. It's the same form, doing the same activity. Whereas Krishna, he was in all those 16,000 forms, he was able to perform a variety of activities at the same time. So here we hear that Krishna used to swim with those wives, his queens, and here they would play with these syringes. They would splash each other, and also they would have these syringes which would, you know, squirt water at each other like a water gun or a water pistol, water syringe. And of course they would all become saturated with the water, and therefore the various, you know, parts of their body would become revealed. And in this way, through their various games, the queens, as we described, their beauty was like lightning, and they were extraordinarily beautiful. As we often relate that when the various princes saw Rukmini for the first time, many of them just fell off the horse. You know, they were sitting on their horses, and they caught a sight of the beauty of Rukmini, and she was so beautiful, and just fell off the horses in a daze, just stunned, absolutely stunned. So here, in these water sports with Krishna, their beauty increased thousands and thousands of times like that. And their hair would, you know, become loose and cover the various parts of their body in a very decorative and very beautiful way. So then Krishna, of course, would be squirting them and splashing them, and so they would approach Krishna in order to take the syringe from him, and that would give Krishna an opportunity, of course, an opportunity to embrace them, embrace his queens, and they would also embrace him, and in this way they would feel that very, very beautiful. They would be smiling and laughing, and they could taste the taste of conjugal love upon their lips, and Krishna would embrace them very, very tightly, and the kumkum from their breasts would smear all over the garland of Krishna. So this is a scene of this conjugal pastime. Krishna's hair would become disheveled. In this way, they were completely absorbed, and Krishna appeared like the king of elephants. So, in this way, we see how when one becomes a devotee of Krishna, Krishna acts in such a way as to completely captivate the mind and the heart of the devotee, so that the devotees become so attached to Krishna because of the way he talks, because of his various gestures, his reciprocal dealings in love, his smiling face, his beautiful glances towards his devotees. Krishna's dealings with his devotees are so attractive that the devotee becomes completely absorbed. They're unable to actually think of anything else. And as Srila Prabhupada describes, that is liberation and that is perfection. If we can come to that platform of always being absorbed in thoughts of God, but not like the Mayavadis who, you know, struggle in their very dry practices of renunciation, always fighting with the material senses, and always having to absorb themselves in dry philosophy in order to somehow, you know, become detached from the material world and attached to the absolute. But here is very, very natural, very absorbing. Krishna's beautiful form, his activities, his loving dealings with the devotees, he completely absorbs very easily the devotees. And if the devotees become absorbed in Krishna like that, that is liberation. So these pastimes, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, hearing Krishna's pastimes in Dwarka with the his queens, hearing Krishna's pastimes with the gopis, hearing Krishna's pastimes as Mahavishnu, his expansion, how he manifests the material world. These pastimes are all completely absorbing. Actually, anything Krishna does in any of his expansions is extremely captivating. Even Krishna's pastime in the creation of the material world, very, very captivating, very, very absorbing. How he so expertly has complete control and supervision over the entire material manifestation, and yet remains seated from afar and has nothing to do with it. Now that's a trick. That's you know, understanding how Krishna manages to do that, to be, as he says in the Bhagavad Gita, that this whole material manifestation is working under my superintendence, under Krishna. It is not that the material energy is working separately like that. It is working directly under the superintendence of Krishna, and yet he has no touch with the material energy at all. That is Krishna's expertise. Very difficult to conceive of, but actually we do see examples of that even in this world, where, you know, sometimes someone may, these days even you can see that people, they can give a command with their mind, and the computer will then activate that command and perform some particular task, right? So, but still, they're usually wired up to the computer somehow. But Krishna's got no wires and things like that. The way he does it is, you know, better. But it just gives you, they're trying to imitate, but, you know, always not quite the same. Not quite, it's actually miles and miles away, worlds apart. But all these activities of Krishna, whether he's with his queens, whether he's with the gopis, whether he's with various different types of devotees in different relationships, or in his work of maintaining, manifesting, destroying the material world, they're all very, very captivating. And if we become absorbed in these pastimes, so much so that you can't think of anything else, and that is liberation, and that is the perfection of life. Devotees actually find that there is, to some degree or another, as one becomes more and more absorbed in Krishna, they, you know, performing the various bodily functions and duties in the material world becomes something not very interesting. It's something they almost have to try very hard to divert their attention back, in one sense. You know, for instance, materialistic people, you know, they're absorbed, oh, when can I get a good sleep? You know, when can I get a good sleep? And you know, they're always thinking of eating and sleeping and, you know, mating and defending and, you know, money. They're always totally absorbed in these things. For devotees, it's in one sense sometimes a bit of an austerity. They're so attracted that, you know, they're happy chanting, they're happy dancing, they're happy associating, they're happy taking prasad with the devotees, you know, seeing the deity, enjoying the various festivals. For them, it's almost the other way, that the austerity is to somehow, you know, have to, you know, interrupt that in order to sleep and, you know, what have you. Yeah, exactly. That's the opposite. So here, in this particular, we see the level of absorption of these queens. Of course, we're trying to become absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Here, we're given an example of perfection of absorption, as described. In verse 14, these queens, they're stunned in ecstatic trance. Their minds are absorbed in Krishna alone. Then, thinking of their lotus-eyed Lord, they would speak as if insane. So, these queens were so absorbed in Krishna, as all the residents of the spiritual world are, that they appeared to be a little bit insane, or they'd gone crazy, or perhaps there's some, you know, they'd had some, he mentions here, they'd had some datura plant. And datura, of course, is a very powerful, it's not a mild hallucinogenic, it's a very, very powerful. You see the various trees sometimes around Melbourne, and they have those trumpet-like flowers, and sometimes teenagers, not knowing the potency of those flowers, they sometimes eat them thinking that they will become intoxicated, but they become so intoxicated that they hallucinate. And several times I've seen in the newspapers where a group of four or five teenagers has spent the weekend eating datura, and maybe two or three of them have died jumping off buildings, jumping off trains, you know, literally. I had a friend of mine who was he was an Indian chap, and he was eating something like that. He went to the movies, next thing he thought he was God, climbed up on the balcony and, you know, dived off into the seats below, you know, just going completely insane. But anyway, the queens of Dwarka are certainly not in that state of danger, nor are they intoxicated, but they are so absorbed in Krishna that they appear to be somewhat intoxicated, because they're talking like crazy queens. And this we see in the conversations that come up over the next 10 or so verses. Very beautiful talks. They're actually in this state of transcendental madness, unmada. There are 10 different symptoms, and we'll see as the various verses go on, these various symptoms, various 10 symptoms are manifested in each of the different verses. this stage, of course, cannot be imitated. The queens here, they're experiencing what's called prema vaichitra, which means that even though Krishna is with them, the thought of separation is actually drives them into a state of bewilderment and being stunned in ecstasy. Even in the association with Krishna here, we just described this beautiful pastime where there's swimming and splashing and, you know, embracing and kissing and what have you. And they're so enchanted by that. They're so bewildered by, you know, this loving pastime. It is so wonderful that their minds just become completely bewildered with ecstasy. You know, just their jubilation, their happiness just, you know, increases to a level that they just become completely bewildered by happiness. They're so happy that then brings the, you know, what if Krishna would separate from us? That sort of, you know, we're so happy with Krishna that we couldn't bear the thought of being separated. Of course, this platform of separation, prema-vichitra, this is happening on a very, very elevated platform of prema, beyond prema, pure love, very high elevated state of prema. But still, you know, we can always learn from the principles, and every day in our devotional life we're actually trying to follow in the footsteps of these great devotees, as we described before. One, by always being absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. So that is what we learn. We're not to imitate the queens, we're not to imitate great devotees in any walk of life, but we can follow in the footsteps of all these devotees, and what they all have in common, of course, is that they're always absorbed in thoughts of Krishna by thinking of his various pastimes. Here, again, this mood of separation is something that we can emulate. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he taught us that we should practice our devotional service while cultivating this mood of separation from Krishna. Particularly, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was always in the mood of Srimati Radharani, in her mood of separation that she manifested at the time when Uddhava went to see her in Vrindavan. Krishna sent Uddhava there, and Uddhava saw Srimati Radharani, and she was also in this state of transcendental madness, even more intense than the queens here, more intense than everyone. Srimati Radharani, of course, manifests the most intense state of transcendental divine madness. There's all the symptoms of emotional unsteadiness and crazy talks. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was always in that mood. Actually, there are three paths to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's life. He, in the first part of his life, he was a grihastha up to about 24 years of age. Because when we talk of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we're talking about Krishna and Radha combined in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the mood of Radha. There's Krishna in the mood of Radha. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in the first 24 years of his life, he was grihastha, and then for the next 24 years of life he spent in Puri. For 6 years of that period he travelled and preached. And for another 6 years he spent with his devotees, that they would always come to Jagannath Puri and enjoy all the wonderful festivals, just like, you know, Julan Yatra and Balaram's appearance day and Jamashtami and so many different festivals. They would come to, and Rath Yatra, they would come to Jagannath every year. And for 12 years, the last 12 years of his life, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was just completely absorbed in the mood of Radharani, in separation from Krishna. And day and night he would talk like a crazy man. And Srirup Damodar and Ramananda Raya, they would have to recite various prayers from the Srimad Bhagavatam, from various pastimes of Krishna, in order to bring Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to external consciousness sometimes, because sometimes he was, you know, banging his head and, you know, jumping in the ocean, thinking it was a Jamuna, and so many different things. So they were always looking after him and nourishing his loving mood in separation, and easing that the pain of separation from Krishna, although it is that pain is not like the pain in the material world. The pain of separation spiritually is an intense bliss, as described like a very good chutney. Mm-hmm. Is you know, so sweet you can't resist it. It's so hot, you know, it's hard to taste. So in this way, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was absorbed, and he taught us that we should also learn this mood of separation. We shouldn't be like all the materialistic people. What to speak of having a mood of separation from God? They don't even notice his absence at all. In fact, many of them are hoping he won't be present in any part of their life. And if they sense the presence of God, they become angry. So that's going to the opposite end of the scale. We certainly don't want to follow in the footsteps of the materialistic rascals. But we should actually always want to feel the presence of the Lord stronger and stronger and stronger within our lives, and the thought of not having Krishna in our lives should be a terrible thought. That thought of separation should strike terror in the heart of a devotee. Sometimes, you know, devotees may feel that there is some difficulty, and they might think, oh, I will give up Krishna consciousness because there is some difficulty. But when there's some attachment to Krishna, you know, any difficulty is immediately vanquished in the presence of the fear of being, you know, somehow being separated from Krishna, somehow being separated from Krishna's devotees, somehow not being able to perform devotional service. For a devotee, that is a terrible, terrible thought. And there's somehow or another we would not have the opportunity to serve Krishna. You see that sometimes with the devotees who, you know, address the deities. And, you know, ordinary people may look at the devotees and, you know, you see the devotees and early in the morning, you know, it's freezing cold and they're just like bees, you know, humming around the lotus feet of the deities, dressing them and doing this. And, you know, the materialistic people, you know, they find that, you know, difficult to understand. But for a devotee, they're just so absorbed in serving Krishna that they, you know, and the fear of not being able to do that, that's a terrible thought. Not the cold, not the early morning, not any, you know, the way they have to sometimes arrange it. Those things don't. The fear that they couldn't do that service, now that's something terrifying. And yet even though the materialists will look at the devotees. Oh, here you are in the cold morning, you're serving Krishna and they're doing something like this, and they're thinking, you know, how? I cannot conceive. But if you drive up Toorak Road at 3:30 in the morning or 4 in the morning on a freezing, you know, cold night, you will see them standing out there with hardly any clothes on, waiting for 2 or 3 hours to get into a nightclub. And their fear is, oh, well, maybe we won't get in. You know, like that. So, you know, the materialists, they're fearful of you know, being separated from their money. You know, they drop it, they may have thousands and thousands of dollars, and all of a sudden a $5 note's missing. Oh my God. And they'll just, you know, they'll just go out of their mind. You know, they're just a little dint in their profit. Just like now we're having, you know, we heard that all the big oil companies, you know, in the Middle East and what have you, they had to put up their prices because they were worried about their profits. You know, so the whole world, of course, is suffering. Families are finding it difficult. You know, people are having to give up their houses. They can't pay their mortgages. They find it difficult to feed their children like this, because they were fearful that they're earning billions of dollars, but they were, you know, terrified that that wasn't enough. We have to put the whole world into suffering because that's not enough profit. And now they've just announced that they've made a bigger profit than usual. So they're happy. But the whole world is suffering because their little fear that, you know, we have so many billions of dollars, but that's not enough. They're terrified. You know, they're terrified of not having enough money, of not, you know, getting, you know, some people it is, you know, food, they live to eat, instead of eat to live, they live to eat. You know, their sex life, this, that and the other. It's just like one day Srila Prabhupada was driving, I think through Dallas or something, and there was some big traffic jam, you know, and the city was grinding away, and there were trucks, and there was, you know, factories and pollution and noise and people, you know, beeping their horns, and, you know, such a terrible chaotic sight, you know. And Prabhupada just, he said, oh, all sex desire, just see, all from sex. Basically, you know, just such a, they're so fearful of, you know, that of missing out on sex, like that, they've created such a terrible, horrible situation in the world, all out of fear that, you know, maybe we won't get enough, you know, sex life like this. So in this way, this is the fear of the materialist people, but the fear of the devotees is that somehow or another, you know, the thought that we somehow can't do my service. You know, if somehow or another I couldn't have the association of the devotees, if I couldn't join in the festivals with the devotees, like that. And, you know, and therefore the devotees are always very, very careful in their execution of Krishna consciousness. Very, very careful the way they treat other devotees, very, very careful. You know, always remembering that, as Prabhupada said, always remember you're dealing with God. Always very careful, you know, in front of the deities. They treat their service, a devotee, any service they have, that's their connection with Krishna. If they're worshipping the deities, if they're sweeping the courtyard, if they're, you know, cleaning the toilets, if they're working in the kitchen, you know, if they're shaving someone's hair, you know, it's all service. I remember in the old days, shaving hair was you took your life in your hands. They used to, some of the devotees were just so quick, like this, and, you know, devotees stand up, he had blood all over his head. I said to one devotee once, I said, yeah, it wasn't funny, but it used to happen a lot. I said to one devotee, you know, you're supposed to drag the blade down, don't slice it across. You know? What, you know, and these are devotees' heads. But whatever service a devotee does, the point is that they take it as their lifeline. It'll take them back to Godhead. You know, one time when Srila Prabhupada was staying at the Radha Damodar temple, Jiva Goswami's temple, there was a little old lady who used to come every day, and she'd get up early in the morning, and she did one service, she would just bring water from the Jamuna, you know, to bathe the Lord, and what they used to use in the temple and the worship. And Srila Prabhupada said, for that one service, she will go back home to Godhead. She did it. And he noticed, it didn't matter what the weather, it didn't matter, nothing could stop her. Very old, you know, lady, frail, but nothing could stop her, because she knew that that one service would take her back to Godhead. And that's how a devotee sees any service that they have the ability to do. That this you know, will protect me from being separated from Krishna, you know, for trillions of years in the material world, like that. So, you know, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, there are four different types of separation, of which here it describes the prema vaichitra. There is also purvaraga, there is separation just prior to meeting. Then there is mana, where there is separation in the form of anger that obstructs one from, even though one may be in the presence of one's beloved, that that anger obstructs them from kissing or looking at each other. So it's like a form of separation. There is pravas, where just after meeting there may be some, you know, little separation, a little distance. And then there is this prema vaichitra, where even in the presence of the beloved, one may feel separated. So it's described that the first three are particularly prominent in Srimati Radharani and the gopis, whereas this form is particularly prominent in the queens of Dwarka. But of those four different types, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that it is favourable for our devotional service if we cultivate purvaraga, separation with anticipation of meeting Krishna, and pravas, where understanding that, you know, we were originally with Krishna and somehow we're now separated. So, you know, those two, to imitate anger is not very conducive to devotional service. And to imitate this in the presence of the Lord, these you know, divine madness, such as manifested by the queens here and sometimes by the gopis, that is also not recommended that we cultivate. But we cultivate that anticipation that, yes, if we keep serving Krishna, if we do our service nicely, then, you know, we are separated, but, you know, that will unite us ultimately. Devotees should not cultivate, they should cultivate the mood of service in that separation, because the intensity of separation increases the intensity of absorption in Krishna. When devotees cultivate the mood of meeting, what's called sambhoga, that yes, I am with Krishna, that's not recommended, because then the devotees can have some lusty, enjoying mood in their devotional service, that I want to enjoy Krishna like this. That's not very recommended. Apart from that also, the devotees cultivating that, yes, you know, I've seen Krishna, I've been with Krishna, and that's it, business done, finished, let's move on to the next thing. So, you know, it's not very conducive to the you know, intense mood of separation. And that intense mood of separation fosters, you know, always recollecting Krishna's pastime. So that's very important that we cultivate that. So I'll just leave it there. If anyone has any questions or comments about this pastime or anything, everyone satisfied? Jai Ho Purusha Prabhupada.